Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, right? The 22nd of February. Jeremy Lin is the focus of our conversation, and there are lots of parts, of course, to this story. I think that many of us are just inspired by somebody who sits on the bench game after game after game after game. He's one game away from being released by the Knicks. He gets to play basketball. Holy cow, look what happens when he plays basketball. And now all of a sudden, he's not just a very talented basketball player, but he has this amazing story that has really captivated our attention. As one of our guests says, who's joining us at the top of the show here, sports like basketball are a huge part of our culture, and success will help us stake our claim as Americans. Maybe the Linsanity has just begun. We'll have three guests with us during the course of the hour. The author of The Linsanity, Jeremy Lin, recolors the urban hoops culture. Sean Gregory is joining us at the top of the show, staff writer for Time Magazine and for Time.com. And we have posted his article on our Facebook page. It's well worth a read because it covers so much territory. So our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Later this hour, Mitch Nellis, also known as Thunder, co-host of the Afternoon Drive Show on ESPN Radio 540 AM Milwaukee, and also it's on an FM station 100.5 in Madison. And later in the hour, Doc Shepler will be joining us, girls basketball coach at Pinewood High School in Los Altos, California, who spent many hours training Jeremy Lin, and Jeremy Lin has given him a great deal of credit for his success. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we branch into an area that we don't often cover, but I think we'll get a lot of calls on this. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Sean Gregory from Time Magazine is joining us. Hello, Sean.
How are you, Kathleen?
Thank you so much for being with us. I really like the article.
Great, thank you. Yeah. Thanks a lot. It was fun to report and write.
I would imagine it was fun. There's something, I'm not a huge basketball fan, but there's something about this story, you know, and you think about all of the people who never got a moment to shine, nobody recognized that they were good at what they did, and all of a sudden he's about to be released from this team and he gets a chance to play. I mean, how can you not be inspired by him?
Yeah, you can't make it up, and it is inspiring,
right.
And it's inspiring a lot of people all over the country, all over the world, and, you know, both the Asian American population, which has been stereotyped for years as far as their athletic ability, they are, you know, personally and specifically inspired. But, you know, it goes beyond that. It really is a story that, you know, any kid can relate to. And, you know, I have a 5-year-old son who's got his Linsanity shirt on. He's inspired. So it's fun to see.
You write in the article that he has crushed all kinds of conventions. What has he crushed?
Well, a few things. One, let's start with the Asian American background. I mean, I think when scouts looked at him, both when he came out of high school and when he came out of college, they try to project. They try to project, what's this guy going to be like in 4 years? And you look at a guy's body and his game, and you know, since we haven't seen an Asian American guard playing in the NBA pretty much ever, I think there was they couldn't picture what this could be. And so, you know, it was tough for a lot of folks to get over that hump. And, you know, Lin's agent is convinced that cost him. And Lin, you know, has been very less vocal now, but, you know, I spoke to him a few years ago about this. He's, you know, very vocal that kind of stereotyping hurt his chances. I mean, his team in high school won the state championship in California. You know, not, you know, North Dakota or Montana, not, you know, places with small populations that aren't a hotbed of athleticism in basketball specifically. California, you know, like, California's a country, and his team was the best in California. So it was, you know, and you speak to some Asian American folks, and that's what I think that part bugs him the most, that his team was so good in high school and he didn't get really any scholarship offers. And Harvard took a chance on him. And Harvard, he spoke to Harvard's assistant who recruited him, and even when he first saw him, he saw Jeremy kind of play down to the competition. The competition wasn't great, and Jeremy wasn't great. And we did a story about him 2 years ago when he was at Harvard because he was getting racial slurs on the court then, which was terrible. And I saw him play Dartmouth, and Dartmouth was very bad that year, and he didn't take over the game. And so I was thinking then, I didn't think this guy was an NBA player because he seemed to, you know, just kind of let the game come to him. And you're thinking, if this guy's an NBA player, he's playing Dartmouth, who's a terrible, he's going to score 35 points. And he didn't do that. And I think it's two things. He's a team player, and he doesn't have to take over the game. And secondly, I think folks who talk about him, he rises to the occasion. We saw that when they played the Lakers a few weeks ago. I guess, where is it now? Yeah, a few weeks ago now. At home in Madison Square Garden, was the first kind of big-time team they played against. What does Jeremy Lin do? He scores 38 points against Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. So, yeah, that's the big-time convention that he crushed. And also the Ivy League convention that, mm-hmm. you know, can Ivy League players be tough? You know, oh, mm-hmm. he's got a Harvard degree. He's not going to be how much does he want this? I mean, I remember talking to some Ivy League players a few years ago, and there was a sense, a stereotype against them, because there was a sense that they weren't fighting for their lives on the basketball court. They knew that they can go back and, you know, get a job at a fancy investment bank or whatever. And so I think that's something also that he had to get over, that hump, that, you know, he really wanted it bad, and he showed that he wanted it bad, and he's played, and he's justified the chance that the Knicks have taken on him.
Right. Isn't it absolutely amazing that it's got to be one of the only areas in American life that a Harvard grad can face kind of discrimination? Oh, he's from Harvard. He can't play basketball.
It's true, though. That's a great point. It is, and it gets to a whole range of, basketball is a working class game, the urban game, and guys come from inner cities and really want it back because that's the only option. And by the way, that's a lot of that is true. I mean, you look at the makeup, the racial and class makeup of the NBA. A lot of that is true. So, but he kind of, you know, flipped that convention. So it's really, you know, all these socioeconomic, ethnic, all these factors are stewed into this story, and it makes it fun to talk about. And, you know, that's why everybody's talking about it, I think.
Tell me why it was and when the moment happened, Sean, because so many people can identify with being the bench warmer, sitting, you know, going to all the games and never having a chance to play, or being an understudy, or just never getting a moment to shine. And he did this. He just sat on the bench for so long, and all of a sudden he was given an opportunity. Why was he given an opportunity, and how long did he stay on the bench?
Well, he stayed on the bench. He basically stayed on the bench all of last year in Golden State, right? And Golden State, by the way, you know, they're based out in Oakland, and Lin is from the Bay Area. So it was a great story. He signs with his hometown team. But even then, there were a lot of skeptics that thought that they signed him as a marketing ploy to attract Bay Area Asian American fans. So anyway, he sits on the bench for a year last year. They cut him. There's the NBA lockout, so the Knicks signed him after Houston also cut him in camp. So the Knicks signed them right before the season started, I think, or right after the season started, in late December. And he got his first game in early February. So he sat on the bench for, a month and a week or and change. And the only reason he played was because the point guard that they had was just not performing at all. They had no other options, and they had a few injuries that opened up some space for him, particularly the injury to Baron Davis, who's a point guard the Knicks signed before the year started, but whose back is hurt, has been out the whole year. If Baron Davis is healthy, Jeremy Lin doesn't sniff the court for the Knicks. There's the injuries, and finally, I think Knicks coach Mike D'Antoni, they were losing so much, just threw up his hands and said, you know, let's, you know, as I say in the story, apparently the Coke vendor wasn't available, and so he has to turn to Lin. And then what happened was also, you know, just kind of crazy circumstances that, so they have, the Knicks have two big scorers, Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire. So Lin comes in the first game, and then I think Anthony got hurt the first or second game he played in. So Carmelo Anthony gets hurt, which takes away a scoring option, one scoring option for the Knicks, which gives Lynn more of an opportunity to create and put the ball in the basket. And then, tragically, the Knicks' other scorer, Amari Stoudemire, his brother died in a car accident the day after the Super Bowl. And so suddenly the Knicks' two main scoring options are not available. So Lynn comes in, and all of a sudden Lynn has to score. And I think that those circumstances gave Jeremy a real opportunity to show what he can do with the ball and enabled him to put up big numbers. And really, if those two things, if Carmelo Anthony doesn't get hurt, and if Amari Stoudemire doesn't have to flee under tragic circumstances, leave the team, I wonder if this Linsanity takes over. So there's all kinds of just... And also, the schedule made it favorable that the Knicks started playing not very good teams at home. And also, I think the sports calendar got our attention, too, because the Super Bowl just ended. So everyone was kind of taking a breather from football. And all of a sudden, there was reason to watch the NBA. So this is a weird part of the sports calendar where baseball hasn't started. College basketball, March Madness hasn't really started. The Masters is still a month away. So these 2 weeks where it's kind of slow... And so it gave us more opportunity to put all our attention into this story. So, you know, it's just an amazing set of circumstances that nobody could have predicted that has enabled this phenomenon to take over.
Right. And tell me how it went from New York to the United States, and then it just took off in Taiwan and in China. He's the third most Googled name on the Chinese search engine. It's a worldwide story.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, I think since our story came out, he's now up to number one.
Is he really? Oh, great.
I think, you know, his background obviously attracts... let me backtrack a little bit. I mean, basketball's gotten huge in China, Taiwan, and all of Asia, the Philippines specifically. And that goes back to Yao Ming. It goes back to the NBA's marketing efforts there. It goes back to Michael Jordan in the 1992 Olympics when basketball really became a global game. You know, when you went to Beijing in the Olympics, I went there for the Olympics, and it was just amazing. Kids in Kobe Bryant jerseys, kids playing pickup basketball. Mm-hmm. One of the most fun times I had in Beijing was going to play with my tall, goofy friends, a couple weekend warriors going to play with these kids. And it was, you know, they ask you to dunk. They love basketball. It was fun to get a sense of that. So anyway, there's that. And then plus, of course, you know, Jeremy's from Taiwan, and that attracts mainland China. And there's some tension there, I think, amongst the social media folks in China about whether he's Taiwanese and Chinese. So there's that. It brings that debate into it. And then it's the nature of social media and media technology today. I mean, you know, with Twitter, with Facebook,
yes,
with China's version of Twitter, with China's version of all these things, that the noise never stops. The conversation never stops. So once something like this starts and he has a few good games and it keeps building and building and building, it kind of becomes overwhelming. And there's no stopping the demand for content about Jeremy, whether that content is, you know, tweets about what you think about him, or that content is Time Magazine feature stories and web stories and Sports Illustrated cover stories or whatever. So I think we live in an age where you can catch fire really, really quickly globally, because with the NBA broadcasting in China, you have streaming and you have all this other stuff. The game is available to anybody, anywhere, and you can talk to folks, you know, across borders about your favorite players. So, you know, we're in an age where, you know, these things can explode quickly, and it's just, you got to sit back and just be like, wow, where did this come from?
Right, wow. That's what you say, wow. Sean Gregory is our guest, the first part of the show, staff writer for Time. He covers sports for the magazine, and he has done the story on Jeremy Lin that's in the current issue of the magazine titled Linsanity. Jeremy Lin recolors the urban hoops culture, and we have posted that on our Facebook page, too, in case you haven't had a chance to read it. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We welcome phone calls. Here is the phone number. number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, starting with Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your guest if he could comment on this headline, which appeared a day or so ago, A Chink in the Armor, and I guess that was regarded as a racial slur. I actually don't think it is, because we have a interesting confluence in which a medieval combat-related expression came to coincidentally contain a 19th century Asian racial pejorative approximately 1,000 years later. And as many people would know, a chink in the armor was regarded as a weakness or fissure or crack in a knight's suit of armor and a competitive advantage to the opposing knight. Now, currently, this expression is applied to all competitive situations that have zero-sum outcomes, one side win, one side loses, including sports. In fact, this expression is commonly used among journalists, including Pulitzer Prize winners. Additionally, an ethnic slur tends to be independent of any context. But a chink in the armor is not a racial slur if Jeremy Lin is not on the team. I was wondering if you could comment on that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mike, for the call.
Yeah. The context of that was that headline was written underneath a picture of Jeremy after the Knicks lost to the Hornets by an ESPN editor. It appeared on their website from 2:30 a.m. to 3:15 a.m. Eastern, something like that, on Saturday morning. Somebody noticed it. ESPN apologized and later fired the editor. I think, I've heard, about the background of it, and it is a phrase used colloquially, but the issue is when, in the context of being under a picture of Jeremy Lin and having that phrase in there, you really get that gets disconcerting. So if you're ESPN, that headline writer either was trying to make a funny pun or was downright trying to make a racial joke, which is, incomprehensible. And if you believe him at his word, that the headline writer, it was a phrase he uses all the time, and as the caller said, it gets used a lot, and just kind of threw it out there, not realizing that word under Jeremy Lin is a problem. You feel, you can sympathize with that, but at the same time, as a headline writer, you've got to be aware of context,
sure.
And
sure.
You've got to know that when you see it on screen, you have to look at it and say, I see that word, I see Jeremy Lin, what's going on there? And so I think if you're arguing whether that punishment was justified, I've thought a lot about this, I think ESPN could make a case that you can justify it, even if you believe the headline writer at his word that it was an accident, you can be concerned about that headline writer's competency to do that job, and then that could be grounds for dismissal too. So, I'm not an ESPN manager, but I understand their decision. I understand the outrage to it. And I do understand that if the man made a mistake, if you believe him at his word, that's an unfortunate mistake, but that's a mistake you really can't make.
No, you have to be aware.
Yeah. It's one thing to say, now a few broadcasters have said it in regards to, like, his weaknesses and stuff like that. And so an ESPN anchor said it when asking Walt Clyde Frazier, one of the Knicks announcers, about talking about Jeremy, and he was suspended for 30 days. And I believe that man's wife is Asian American. He apologized. He didn't even realize it. I think when you say it, it's a little more excusable because, it's something people do say. There's no doubt about that. But when you see it, you're writing it, and, you can take back what you say, but it's hard to take back what you've already written on the keyboard and published. When you see it on the screen, you're about to hit publish, and it becomes a little more hard to believe that there wasn't something more at play. If there wasn't something more at play, again, you can say, man, what was that guy thinking? If I'm a manager, you might question his ability to do the job.
Yeah. And tell me about some of the other racial taunts. You write that he in college faced challenges, including frequent racial taunts.
I haven't heard, you know, he hasn't done a ton of interviews, and so I get the sense he hasn't gotten as much of it in the NBA, if any. And I asked a couple of his friends about that, and they've said, no, he hasn't said anything about that. But in college, yeah, I mean, I describe in the story that the C word that rhymes with ink, as we say, really stupid stuff. Hey, sweet and sour pork, you know, just kind of really dumb, unoriginal, mean-spirited things. And, you know, and I remember when talking to Jeremy about that and trying to figure out, you know, why is it acceptable to do that, you know?
Right.
And you know, when we wrote that story, there's a lot of shock and anger, and it got a lot of reaction that, you know, just people, it started a debate. I mean, you know, if you use harsh racial terms, against other ethnicities, it would get a lot of more, probably an instant angry reaction. But why wasn't this reaction worse when it happened and stuff like that? And I don't know. It's a tough one. But it was surprising to hear in 2010 that people thought it was okay to say that stuff. And maybe one reason is because it was so new that, you know, people hadn't seen an Asian American basketball star, and so just for some reason felt more comfortable. I don't know, just kind of making light of it. It's hard to pick apart those reasons.
Right.
I think writing that story in 2010 about those phrases really surprised people. Surprised me that A, it happened, and B, I don't know, that there wasn't more kind of outrage about it and willingness to kind of really stop that kind of stuff.
And
the worst part about it is he got it from some Ivy League players too, which, again, crushing convention. You'd think the Ivy Leaguers are more sophisticated, but apparently not so much.
Right, you're right, that they were the worst offenders.
Yeah. I remember, you know, a few gym. He said almost every Ivy League gym he got it, and then at least one Ivy League player said something, which is, you know, sad.
And why is it that Jeremy Lin is not granting many interviews? Is it because he's just overwhelmed?
Yeah, you know, quick, not that, you know, we were supposed to get an interview with him right after the... So we decided to do the story after he had two good games. And we decided, even if he doesn't have any more good games, he's done enough to kind of change stereotypes, even by being in the league, that we can explore this cultural story about the urban hoops culture and stuff like that. Then he had his third game. So we put in the interview request before his third game, and they said, we'll tell you after the game. Anyway, he had his third big game. They say, come tomorrow to the facility, meet us at noon. I go up there, and 10 minutes before, I'm excited to have this interview with Jeremy, and it gets canceled.
Oh, no.
And Jeremy, to his credit, sent me a really personal note of apology.
Well, that was nice.
Which a lot of athletes don't do.
Right.
Just he's overwhelmed, and his life is changing quickly. And I think that's the Knicks decided quickly, and he decided in concert with the Knicks, we just got to shut it down because it'll get to be too much. And, you know, I wish there wasn't a commitment made before we had that interview, you know what I mean? But,
right.
You know, it is what it is, and I appreciated the note of apology and all that stuff. But anyway, I think it's because, again, his life is just in cahoots. I think somebody made the point, I think his agent told Sports Illustrated that he hasn't slept in, you know, 2 weeks.
You got to sleep.
And he's getting a million requests. Everybody wants something. He's hearing from friends he's probably hasn't heard of in years and all this stuff. And so I don't blame, well, selfishly, I wish, you know, we had time with him, and I think it'd be a fun, revealing interview, and I think he's smart, and he'd be able to talk about this stuff. You know, I understand their stance, and I don't particularly blame their stance either.
Sean, thanks so much for being with us. We'll post your article on our Facebook.
Great.
Hope you get that interview.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Wish us luck.
Yeah, I will. Sean Gregory, staff writer for Time Magazine. He covers sports for the magazine, and he has a piece on Jeremy Lin in the current issue of the magazine, Lin's Sanity. Jeremy Lin Recolors the Urban Hoops Culture, and it will be on our Facebook page in case you didn't see it. That's The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find it there. We continue our conversation. If you're on hold, please stay there, and we'll get to your Facebook messages to your email messages here in a moment as well. Mitch Nellis is joining us now in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, also known as Thunder, co-host of the Afternoon Drive show on ESPN Radio 540 AM Milwaukee and 100.5 FM in Madison. And we thank you very much. Should I call you Mitch or Thunder?
Mitch is fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much.
It was a long walk, you know, yeah, all the way up the elevator.
I know. They're in our building. We should say that. It's hard. I don't normally follow basketball games, but there's something about this kid that is so captivating because he just sat there for all this time and nobody knew what he could do. Are there a lot of stories in sports like that, Mitch, or is this an exception?
This is an exception. There are some stories like this where players will come out of nowhere and have success, but not at this level and not at this stage. And certainly what is making Linsanity, Jeremy Lin, so exciting is that he's doing it at Madison Square Garden in New York City, where every game is an event. It's bigger than basketball. And certainly his race is an issue. I mean, you can't say it's not, but it's excited an entire... the Asian American community is excited to be able to follow someone that they're excited about. And so that's part of it. Also, a huge part of it is that he went to Harvard. Right. And the last player who played for Harvard is years and years ago. So, or any Ivy League for that matter. I think the Charlotte Bobcats have kind of a role player who went to Princeton, you know, but certainly not the same as to what he's doing. So this is an anomaly. This isn't normal. But it's a lot of fun to watch.
Isn't it fun? It's so much fun. What are his gifts as a basketball player? Is it he went to Harvard and he's really smart on the court, or does he move well, or what is it?
Part of it is his smartness on the court. What I've been most impressed about is the way he's fearless on the court. And I know last year he spent some time with Golden State and had said a couple weeks ago that he never felt comfortable. He never felt like he was playing his game. He was trying to fit their system or, you know, as a rookie, he didn't have the confidence to play the style he wanted to play. But whether he's been given that confidence now by his coach or, as he said, he just said that he was going to be himself on the court. And so his fearlessness and being able to attack the basket against guys, you know, he's 6'3", 6'4", so there are guys 6'7", 8 inches taller than him that he's attacking all the time. And so it's that. His shooting has been great. His shooting won't continue to be this great. It's impossible to shoot at the percentage he's shooting at. It should come back. It should normalize a little bit. But his passing skills, you know, like you said, he has a smartness on the court that just watching him for 10, 15 minutes at a time, you can certainly realize.
Yeah. What's his future with the Knicks? Will he be signed next year?
I'd be surprised if he wasn't. It's such a big story. Like I'm sure you've been talking about and basketball fans are talking about, this is bigger because it's happening in New York. And the Knicks know what a marketing tool they have here to reach out to a whole another audience that they have not hit before. It would surprise me unless something goes wrong with some of their other superstars. And, you know, the Knicks have been on this path where with Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire have tried to replicate what the Miami Heat have done by bringing in another big three. Well, they haven't really been able to do it. They have kind of a big two. I don't think Jeremy Lin's the third headed monster to go along with them, but they have to make this work if he's going to be, you know, and he might be a flash in the pan. I mean, he might, 2-3 years from now, he might not be Jeremy Lin anymore. Linsanity may have run its course. But it looks like he's going to be a good, if not great, NBA player. The Knicks have to keep him for the marketing purposes, for what he's done to that crowd, for the way he's just energized that entire city.
And what's the chemistry between Lin and Carmelo Anthony? Can they share the spotlight here? Is there jealousy? Are they good buddies?
We don't really know yet. Carmelo Anthony was hurt for most of what Jeremy Lin's been doing. And that's one of the reasons Jeremy Lin even saw the court. Not that they play the same position, but the Knicks had a number of injuries, and so they had to look down their bench and give this guy a shot. They were on the verge of releasing him. And they just said, all right, well, you know, we'll throw you in there. You're doing it in practice. So far, everyone said the right things. Carmelo has said that he can play with Jeremy, but it remains to be seen really how their chemistry is on the court.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email that's come in from John. I saw Moneyball last night. It seems that what happened with Jeremy Lin might be similar to what happened in baseball, with scouts being stuck in conventional biases and conventional wisdom in regard to players. Careers are at stake in player decisions, so people will tend to do the safe thing.
It's an interesting comparison. The Moneyball team of the NBA has often been the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets have a young GM who analyzes all the numbers and believes more in numbers than scouts sometimes. Jeremy Lin started the season with the Houston Rockets. And because of the number of players they had at his position who were already under contract, they had to let him go because he wasn't under a long-term contract. But it's funny that he was on that team that is most associated with trying to incorporate some of the aspects of Moneyball into the National Basketball Association. There's always going to be that give and take between the old school and what, you know, scouts have been doing forever and new technology and new ways to analyze things. Jeremy Lin could be a face for the new way to do things, but there's always going to be, to me, it's always comes down to the eye test. Watching a game, you can usually tell who can play and who can't, who should be playing more, who should be playing less. Right now, it sure looks like Jeremy Lin belongs.
Yeah. What does it do for other? And I'm wondering if there's a big pool of talent that's been overlooked, Asian-American basketball players. Is there?
I don't know that there's a huge talent, but there must be some. Yao Ming had success before getting hurt. Ijean Lan, who the Milwaukee Bucks made their high draft pick a couple of years ago, didn't really work out, went to Washington, now playing with Dallas, is good enough to play in the NBA. So it is a I don't know if it's a fan base or a talent pool, I guess, where the NBA has been looking to for years and will continue to look to. A lot of it, kind of like going back to Moneyball, is, you know, it's an old boys club who are used to seeing a certain type of player. You know, not, I'm going to stereotype right now, but the American white guy is the really good shooter. And, you know, the tall guys have to play with their back to the basket. And all these certain things. Certainly, these can be challenged and will be. And if Jeremy Lin helps hasten that progress, that can only help the product on the floor for the NBA.
Our number is 800-486-8655, and we will momentarily feel free to ask him a question, too, if you'd like, Thunder. We'll be speaking with the girls' basketball coach at Pinewood High School in Los Altos, California, Doc Shepler, who spent a great deal of time training Jeremy Lin, and Lin has been effusive in his praise of Doc Shepler, the coach, and has praised him for improving his shot. Our number is 800-486-8655. A caller who couldn't stay on the line before we go to the coach asks, why is it that this kid sat on the bench for all this time? Didn't anybody notice during practice that he might have some talent?
That's a great question. That's certainly a question I have. I'm guessing they saw talent, but with the amount, you know, some of it is politics. And not because of his race, but because of who has a guaranteed contract. And if guys have guaranteed contracts at his position, they're going to be the ones who are going to get the benefit of the doubt. They're going to be the ones who, if it's a coin flip, if it's 50-50, and if they have a proven track record, you know, they're going to go with them as opposed to taking a shot on a young kid. You know, Jeremy, at the end of last year, was with Golden State and had a couple nice moves. You know, had a couple nice games, played a game against the Lakers where he had a couple layups over Kobe Bryant. And was that a big enough was that a big enough test to see if he could really succeed? According to Golden State, no. Again, he was with Houston, but Houston had three players ahead of him on the depth chart. So a lot of times it's the luck of the timing when, again, with the Knicks, guys got hurt. Had guys not gotten hurt, had the Clippers, before the season started, not taking one of the point guards from the Knicks off their roster, he never would have gotten a shot.
Oh, man, so, it's just amazing to think about all of that.
It's got to be a perfect storm sometimes for something like this to happen.
You got it. Feel free to ask our next guest questions, too, because you're really the sports guy. Doc Shepler is our guest right now, joining us by phone from California, I think, is where he is. Girls basketball coach at Pinewood High School in Los Altos, California. He spent quite a number of hours training Jeremy Lin, and Lin has given him credit for improving his shot. He was introduced to Shepler by by his high school coach, Lynn's coach, that is, and the two had worked together on occasion, but they spent some 400 hours in the gym during the lockout time. Doc, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, our great pleasure. And also joining us, we have Thunder. You'll have to hear him in California sometime. Mitch Nellis, who's the co-host of the Afternoon Drive show on ESPN here in Milwaukee, who may want to ask you a question,
great.
Too.
Hey, Doc, how you great. Doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm living the dream.
Yeah, well, we all are here. We're all flying high.
No doubt about it.
Great feeling for everybody. I mean, when my wife sits down, my wife only watched our kids play sports. You know, she's watching her reality shows, and my wife is now appointment television with Jeremy Lin watching his game. So if she's watching it, I mean, it's amazing.
It is amazing. So, you had a chance to see him, didn't you, in New York?
We did. Not a lot. We had a nice 2-hour lunch to spend with the Palo Alto teammates and the ex-Palo Alto players that made the long trek during President's Day weekend, so we got to spend 2 hours with him, telling stories and talking and joking around and stuff. And I think it was great for him because it was like a step away from the reality of his world, which is now totally engulfed with attention and things like that. And just it was great because it brought him back into, you know, just having fun and, you know, being a normal guy, which he was 2 weeks ago. You know, normal guy trying to make it, and it was just a big sensation. So.
What did you teach him that you see on the court, Doc?
Well, as far as, you know, his shooting mechanics, you know, he needed to make some not drastic changes after getting drafted by nobody, and the Warriors picked him up. We wanted to meet up and work on some things, but, you know, he had a 2-week engagement with Yao Ming that took precedent over meeting with me on a shot. But we talked a little bit about, you know, I think what he needed to do to correct his flaws in his shot. And he started to make those corrections during his rookie season last year, and watching him shoot before games, I was reasonably impressed that he started to do, you know, the things that I felt was necessary for him to be a great shooter. So when we met in May, he was unable to really work on anything movement-wise because he had a patella tendon partial tear that he had to have a platelet surgery where they take some of his blood out and put it in a centrifuge and inject it in there. So he wasn't really able to move and shoot and, you know, run and jump for 2 or 3 months. But in that time, he worked religiously on just perfecting the perfect release we want him to do. And in hindsight, it was a great progression because that's all he could do was work on a release. He could work free throws and stuff. So basically, he just mastered one aspect of being a great shooter, is that having a repeatable release to shooting the ball. But then when we started working, on just 2 or 3 different technical things that was going to bring his shot in line. And if you want me to go over the technical things, I can, but basically it's all about when you talk describe a shooter, it's like your rhythm, your release, and your balance of your shot. The balance, making sure that the feet are underneath the shoulders, his feet were too close. Making sure his jump is efficient, he jumped too high. When little boys think of progressing from 7th, 8th grade to 9th grade, they want to shoot like the big boys. I want to shoot a jump shot. And they start jumping and chucking the ball. And that's where the rhythm of the shot goes astray. And Jeremy, when he was in 8th grade, was a terrific shooter because he shot below his chin. But then when he made the progression to shooting above his head, he got into some bad mechanical flaws. He was jumping too high. He took the ball too far behind the head. And he was slinging the ball instead of snapping his wrist. So those are the changes that we made. And also, after we got the foundational things with his shot, we started work on specific shooting situations, catch and shoot, triple threat, off a dribble, and then working on more advanced shots, coming off a screen and shoot, coming off a ball screen and shooting, squaring in the air and shooting. Then we delved into some floaters. But the foundation he set, the work he put in, started to kick in his body-wise. I mean, his body became a great shooter, but then I had to transfer his mind into being a great shooter, where you believe it's going in. You know, he missed a couple shots, he'd get down. And I just, no, next one's in. Next one. You have to have a mindset of a shooter, which is no conscience. Next one's in. Mm-hmm. You don't want your mind to start affecting what your body can do. And that's what was happening early when he was a terrific shooter, but when he missed a couple of times, it'd be down in the dumps and, you know, fretting and worrying about it. you know, not being a baby, but just not having that mindset, that total assassin, the ball's going in, look, I'm totally relaxed. Toward the end of that time of 4 months, I could see that my verbal communication with him was starting to settle in. He was starting to think like a shooter. And one of the key points is when he went on a trip to China, he was talking to one of the shooters on his team. His name is Josh Acognon, and he had the shooting mentality. And Jeremy was just asking him questions. So what do you think about after you miss? He says, nothing. I don't care if it goes in. And if I don't care, it goes in. And it's that happy medium between letting your body do the work and trusting what you do. Mm-hmm. And he's at that point, and like I said to so many people, he has so many more outside shots in his bag. I think he could look for a shot a little bit more, but he does what he does best, which is attack the rim, get to the basket, create opportunities for other people in catch and shoot threes or all-lob dunks or bounce pass finishes. That's why the Knicks have started to progress, is because their shot selection is now a wide-open three in balance, in range, and dunks at the rim and layups at the rim instead of manufacturing shots through their other players.
Doc, let's go beyond basketball for a moment. The, the whole story is incredible, but now all of a sudden Jeremy Lin has a worldwide stage. What's he going to do with it? Is he going to? He hasn't been given a whole lot of interviews. Who knows what's going on in his head? But is he going to use this stage in some way that we don't know about yet?
I'm sure he is. He's very religious. He's a man of faith. I'm sure that's happening. He's had a foundation for the last 6 months, I believe, where he started a foundation. I think, you know, the stage that you're talking about, he's already creating that by simply the way he plays. And just talking about my wife watching games, I mean, he's infusing his team first with the energy to play. His teammates love playing with him. People love to watch him. Why is that? Because he's unselfish, he plays the game the right way, he plays hard, he embodies the spirit that you want in an athlete.
Mm.
But that being said, he's bringing people back to loving basketball again. Mm. And that's, you know, look at the Knicks ratings, for crying out. Look at ratings when, you know, he's bringing people back to love the game, that we're away from basketball. We can't stand rooting for these selfish guys that play. We want to get behind somebody that embodies the spirit and of playing basketball. And he has done that. And I think the next step is to affect people on a much deeper, more meaningful level. Mm. And that's, I mean, getting to know him, you know, in the time that I have. He is the neatest kid. He is the nicest kid that wants to do things for people that are less fortunate. So I think that's the next process after all of this starts to settle into a plateau.
Yeah, thanks, Doc, so much. Doc Shepler, girls basketball coach at Pinewood High School in Los Angeles, California, and he spent time training Jeremy Lin. We thank Doc so much for being with us. They spent time, we're talking hundreds of hours, so spent a lot of time. Still joining us in our studios in Milwaukee, Mitch Nellis, known as Thunder, co-host of the Afternoon Drive show on ESPN Radio 540.
I should get that in.
Oh, thank you. You want to do that again? Feel free.
Boo. Exactly. Oh, nicely done.
Yeah. So there is something unique, as Doc was saying, about this kid's personality, too, that he shares the ball, that he's, I don't know, is he a nice player? He plays basketball nicely?
It looks like he plays the game the right way. And for so long, the NBA player, or the stereotype of the NBA player, has been that of a selfish player, or that of a player that's turned the masses off. And so watching him, it's been fun to watch what someone who plays the game the right way looks like, because a lot of us have forgotten that. A lot of us are used to a lot of one-on-one or two-on-two basketball as opposed to involving the entire team. And it looks like that is on his mind at all times, that he wants to make the players around him better, not just take the spotlight for himself.
Well, that's interesting. Mike in West Allis. Hi, Mike.
Morning, Kathleen. I think your previous guest just hit on the buzzword, and that's the term spirit. The difference between professional athletes and high school basketball games is obvious. You can't see anything on the court that duplicates anything like the enthusiasm at a high school level or even a college level. And I think what this athlete is portraying is basically the love of the game, and that's a pure emotional thing, which doesn't happen too much in professional sports, but also Sunday night there was a 60 Minutes on a chess prodigy, some guy.
Oh, I saw that story. Oh my gosh,
he was a 10-year-old, and he matched the world champion. And now they want to change him into someone with discipline. I'm saying, you know, why would you want to ruin perfection by making it almost technically a burden? I mean, this guy should be going out playing with his high school buddies and being spontaneous, because his gift is what gives him the ability to think rationally. And so often in our culture and in this country is we change people who have the gift and we make them into machines or financial, you know, every Moneyball, that movie is fantastic, by the way. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's an absolutely spectacular movie about people who played baseball because they loved the game of sport. And that is what makes professional sports so boring, is basically they've ruined it with competitive money. And Jeremy Lin exemplifies the spirit of pure enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. Mitch?
It's a great point about the enthusiasm and the excitement. It's one of the reasons I think this story is taking hold and could only work in New York City at Madison Square Garden. If Jeremy Lin was on another team, it would be a story. There would be buzz, but nowhere near the story it is now, because we talk about high school and college athletics. In my opinion, Madison Square Garden is the only venue in the NBA that can capture that college-like excitement. You know, you go to a Wisconsin game in Madison, or you go to a Marquette game in Milwaukee, and you can feel that buzz. If it's an exciting game at the end, the kids are into it, the student section's into it, the alumni's into it. There's an emotional attachment that you don't have when you're watching athletes who make $14 million a year. With Jeremy Lin, A, he's not making $14 million a year, but B, after every big shot, there's a fist pump, there's a chest bump. He's celebrating, but not by himself, with his teammates. And people see that spirit, that enthusiasm, that excitement that he has with his teammates and in a venue that appreciates that type of enthusiasm.
He's making something like $762,000 this year. Carmelo Anthony is making $18 million.
Exactly. Yeah, and listen. $760,000 is nothing to laugh at. I think we'd all jump at the opportunity to take that. But in the economics of the National Basketball Association, he's on the low end.
Right.
And not that he's playing for a contract, because I don't think anybody could argue. But on some level, in his mind, you know, as someone, as Doc said, has started a foundation, wants to do good work in his community and worldwide, the next contract is certainly somewhere in his mind. It's not what he's playing for. It's not what he's all about. But that's just a reality of the situation.
Right. Thanks, Mike, so much for your call. Dave in Egg Harbor. Hi, Dave.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to put a slightly different spin on the word spirit and point out that at least, I mean, there's no way to compare Lin to other players in other sports purely and simply, but like Tim Tebow, Jeremy Lin is a Christian, and he's unashamed to talk about that and how that affects his goals and his play. I mean, in the NBA especially, and I don't really follow the NBA that much partly because of all the bad boys in it, but it seems to me that Jeremy Lin plays the way he does partly because he's a Christian and because he has something outside of basketball that's much bigger than just love of the game to motivate him. And he brings that to the NBA, just like Tim Tebow brings that to the NFL, perhaps in a more controversial way. But maybe give him time. Maybe Jeremy Lin will be as controversial in a good way as Tim Tebow is.
The comparisons to Tim Tebow are a tough one for me. Not necessarily just because of religion. I think as a player, I don't think they're anywhere near the same. Tim Tebow was in kind of a perfect storm of a team whose defense was playing great and got lucky numerous times over the year. He's not that good at football. Jeremy Lin, what he's done on the basketball court shows that he's really good at basketball. And so, you know, people have tried to make that comparison because of the phenomenon of Tebow mania and Linsanity. And I don't necessarily believe that, just because I think that there are huge differences in what they're able to do in their respective jobs. The religious aspect, listen, that can't be ignored. I mean, but you bring up Tim Tebow, I'll bring up Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is also a Christian. And Aaron Rodgers, everything we see on the field from him, I mean, he does things the right way. He says the right thing. You know, he from all appearances, lives his life the way we want our athletes to live them. And so, you know, that can certainly help guide people's paths. But listen, athletes live in a different world than the rest of us. People who make $18 million a year live in a different world, whether movie stars, athletes, whoever it might be. And at some point, that's something that needs to be kept in mind, maybe confronted, maybe dealt with, however it ends up. You know, Jeremy Lin's been doing this for 10 games. Let's see if it keeps going all year. Let's see what happens next year. Let's see if he gets a three-year, $45 million contract. And not that it will change him, but that can't help but change parts of your life, if not all of your life.
Right. And it's hard to imagine, but you know professional ball players of all sorts. How do you take in the fact that you were on the bench and in a couple weeks you're the number one hit on the internet in China, for heaven's sake? I mean, what
shocking.
Do you do with that? It is shocking.
I have no idea. I mean, I don't. That amount of fame, I would have no idea what to do with. You know, part of it is, you know, he's probably got endorsement deals knocking down his door.
Right.
Endorse this, endorse that in America and in China. And, you know, to go from being able to walk down the streets of New York and not one person in the world knows who you are to now, you know, I'm sure needing to take limousines and, you know, whether it's security or a couple buddies protecting you, whatever it might be, it is a different world for sure.
Yeah, it is. Mitch, thanks so much. Have
Thank
fun
you.
On your show this afternoon. Mitch Nellis, also known as Thunder, co-host of the Afternoon Drive show on ESPN Radio, 540 AM in the Milwaukee area and 100.5 FM in Madison. Tomorrow during this time period, the author of a great book, Beautiful Souls, Saying No, Breaking Ranks, and Heeding the Voice of Conscience in Dark Times.